Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
What we do.
Here's John Williams.
Every day, this is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. It's a beautiful day downtown Chicago. We're going to be here this afternoon till 3, then we'll do the news at 3. 3:05, you heard, we'll begin our coverage. White Sox baseball, Twin Bill, after the rain last night. This is WGN. Remember, the Mincing Rascals podcast is the best podcast in the state of Illinois. I host it. It's thanks to smart people like Steve Bertrand and Eric Zorn and several of our colleagues here and around town. And we sort of rehash some of the stories that are in the news. Illinois Broadcasters Association said it was the best podcast of the year in the state of Illinois. And all you have to do is tell your smart speaker, play the Mincing Rascals from WGN. And there the latest episode will be. And then it will roll right into the previous one and the previous one. But just listen to one. I think you'll enjoy it. If not, no harm, huh? By the way, that conversation with the state lawmaker about LGBTQ history in Illinois, you won't pass the eighth grade until you pass or at least demonstrate a comprehensive knowledge thereof of what I'm not exactly sure. So we're going to talk about that at around 1:35. What should or should not be in a kid's history curriculum? That's a whole conversation. And should this be included? The problem is, if you don't love the idea, then it sounds like you're not on the big bus. And I'm on the bus. I'm just not sure we got enough seats for everybody, if you follow. Our news click at WGNradio.com asked you about this. We said, okay. So you had three options. I like that the schools will teach LGBTQ history next year. Or I need to know more, or I don't like this addition to the curriculum. 24% of you said you like it, 35% said you need to know more, and 40% of you said, based on what you've heard so far, you don't like this idea at all. I read the bill, and I guess it's now the law, and it sure seems to be vague to me, which is maybe how those things go. They just say you need to demonstrate competency in this subject matter, and the law doesn't drill down to too far into exactly what the classroom will be like or how many hours in the school year will be dedicated to that. We'll talk about that a little after 1:35. Before this gets away from me, just a couple of other little small points I haven't got to the last few days and I thought were just worth mentioning. Did you see the Simone Biles video of her doing the double flip on her dismount from the beam and then the double triple on the floor?
She's a monster. It is... I'm blown away at how good she is.
They say she may be the best male or female ever. You know, because the guys are stronger and faster, so sometimes the guys go higher. The height that she achieves on that first pass where she's on the floor and she starts her routine and she runs really fast and then does that spring, 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 boing. She must be 10 feet in the air. It's unbelievable. I don't mean like dunk a basketball. I mean her whole body is above the rim. Whew! And she does two flips and three spins and then lands it like, yeah, and then just keeps going.
I can't even jump up and land like that. And yet she's doing all these things in the air. It is insane.
So props to her. Every now and then somebody does something like that. And you're just so proud of the whole species. Like, all right, I can't do that. I don't know anybody that can do that. But one of us did that. So, wow, aren't we amazing things? I was reading in Time magazine, and there was an article that said, if you want to stay hydrated, and you do, here's what you need to do. Don't drink a lot of water. Don't just sit there with a big, tall glass of water and just chug that thing down. They said the body's not very efficient at absorbing a large amount of water at a short period of time. So what you're supposed to do is just take little sips all day long, and you're supposed to eat just before and during a meal. I guess none of that's real surprising. But if you go, gee, my skin is dry, or gee, I should just stay hydrated. Don't drink a whole 8 ounces, 10 ounces. Don't chug it. Just sip during the day. Otherwise, you're just going to pass the water along, as it were.
And there's a sodium factor. You need to be able to absorb it.
How's that?
So if you have like no sodium in your body, the water really is not being absorbed at all. And it truly is just going through you.
Wow. Yeah.
I learned that the hard way.
You want to elaborate on that story at all?
Well, because I tried to stay hydrated. I had a kidney stone at 18 because I wasn't drinking enough water. But then when I was trying to drink a lot of water, I was just going to the bathroom. And then the doctor was like, well, no, you need to actually have sodium, or they suggest like Gatorade or vitamin water. So you have the electrolytes and some of the sugars in there to help you absorb the water.
See, I'm not real good on this subject, but I know that once upon a time when I was in high school, we were on the football team, and we'd be practicing out there in the hot summer days, and they would give us salt tablets.
There you go.
And I guess that had something to do with that, but I don't know. Just in retrospect, it just doesn't seem like a real good idea to me. Of course, the coaches really didn't know anything. God bless the coaches. They were not taught anything. They literally did not know anything about hydration and head impacts and, you know, concussion protocols, the things that we know today.
I used to hate those salt tablets.
Yeah.
You know what they tasted like.
Well, salt?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Little yellow, right? Were they little yellow ones?
Yeah.
Here, it's 100 degrees. Have some salt tablets.
I know. And you and I are not that old, right? I mean, Teddy Roosevelt wasn't our coach, although Teddy Roosevelt famously got us the National Collegiate Athletic Association, the NCAA. Football became a safer sport because of Teddy Roosevelt's steerage of that thing. But our coaches would be like, I just think about the helmet that I used to wear in high school and high school football. I was on the college team for a year. I was a kicker, but I don't actually think I can claim I played college football. But the helmets we had were just so rudimentary. You know, there was just some string in there that held the little pad off the base of the helmet. There was no cushioning.
It's like the one Antonio Brown has used.
Who's Antonio Brown?
The Oakland Raiders player came from the Steelers.
Yeah.
Said he wasn't going to go back and play again because they wanted him to use an updated helmet.
Oh, I saw the headline on that. I didn't read the story.
I'm sorry. I thought, you know, I didn't mean to distract you.
That's fair enough. I mean, I'm just talking about helmets and how back then they were just so crude. And, you know, I was 6 foot tall and could run pretty fast. And there was another kid on the team who was 6 foot tall, ran pretty fast. And we'd run into each other and hit our heads. And that was called practice. And the coach just said, that's what you do. That was almost a rite of passage, right? That's how you prove that you were man enough to play football at Manuka, by God. And in retrospect, it's just so stupid. What are we thinking? Here, have a salt tablet. That was it. Cute story about my high school football team. My freshman year, the coach was so old school. He was so hard knocks. He was so frustrated with the mamby-pamby play out here. I could do better. And so the next day, the coach, who was like, you know, 58 or whatever, came out with full gear on.
Oh, yeah.
And they broke his leg. They broke his leg severely. He spent the rest of the season in a wheelchair. They could have killed
him. The players?
The players broke the coach's leg.
Because they tackled him?
Yeah, they hit him hard.
So how do we feel about that?
Well, there was, I think, a silent measure of glee among some of the detractors of the coach. I know the administration was embarrassed.
It's a little bit of karma, don't you think?
Well, if you yell at your kids enough and tell them they're mamby-pamby, and then you come out with a, you know, $24 helmet on and some shoulder pads that don't fit that well. What do you think's going to happen?
I'm sorry he broke his leg, but 30 years later, it's kind of...
I didn't break his leg.
Appropriate. Well, no, you were the kicker.
The varsity did.
Right. Yeah. But are there still coaches like that?
I don't know. It just seems to be so counterproductive. I mean, if you were a coach and your raison d'etre was to win football games, this... I don't know how you do that, but I'm not sure
that's
the way.
Beating up on 15-year-old boys.
Yeah, I don't know that motivates them. You know, I don't know. Kids are so coddled these days. I'm not sure that the pendulum should go too far away from that. That's a good question. I don't know how you get the most out of a high school football, baseball, basketball, track team or not. But you put a helmet on the coach's head, and boy, golly, now you've got yourself some tacklers. Now you got yourself some tacklers.
Turns out he didn't know how to motivate.
Yeah. One last note here, Steve, just a couple little things to get out of the way. Going to Ravinia in the Chicago area, I think, is something a lot of people want to do, but it just seems like this epic journey to get up there. It's not easy to drive to unless you live right there. So otherwise, you got to find public transportation. And Metra stops right there. I told you that last year. You know that. Brenda and I did it again last night. We were so discouraged because we'd packed our little picnic basket, and then we find out it's going to be, you know, scattered tornadoes. How often do you hear that in the forecast? And then severe showers and stuff, mostly south of I-80, but it could have been up there too. But we did it. We got on the choo-choo, and we went up there, got off on the right stop this time. And it's so easy to do, and it's such a lovely place. I highly recommend it to all my patients who chew gum.
It's a magical place. Now, I'm lucky. I'm very lucky because I live close by, and I can just Uber over there.
Buddy of ours was with us and his wife, and he saw Chicago, and you know he just goes there all the time. And if you just don't care that much about the music, but you just want to, you know, sit in a well-manicured lawn and garden area and have some wine and eat some sandwiches with some other folks, that's a good place and way to do it. I'll totally give you that. I'm not going to talk too much about the president today, but I did notice that he has eliminated at least some component of the Endangered Species Act. And I'm not going to get into that because I don't know what we need to do to save the species. But I do know that when you tweet about it, you should at least get the spelling right if it's important to you. Not that long ago, I sent a note of consolation to a friend, and I wanted to make sure I had the spelling right on the note. Because to send something that's important and to have a typo in there makes it sound like it's not too important after all. And I read the note twice before I hit send to my friend. And then when this person responded to me, I one more time read my initial note to this person and realized that, in fact, I had sent a note of consolation with a misspelling in the second word. I couldn't believe that I did that. You know, it was supposed to say heard, and I wrote the word head or something like that. There was a letter missing. It was still a word. And I felt bad about that because, well, this person got the import of what I was trying to do. It sure looks casual, doesn't it, when you don't even have the courtesy to get the words right and a message that you're trying to convey. Now, I know spelling and words literally don't matter that much to a lot of people anymore, and maybe I need to get on that bus. It's thoughts and emotions more than mamby-pamby letters. But it still matters to me. And I think it should matter to the president if he's tweeting something. So he tweeted the following: today, I ended some protections of the Endangered Species Act. The law never worked! Obama failed, capital letters, when he tried to use the law to save the species like the Alaska panda bear and the great American teddy bear. Now they're totally extinct. The only ones left live in zoos or are stuffed! Okay, so he's dismantling that part of the Obama plan, maybe for good reason, maybe for bad. I don't know, but I do know this. If it's that important to you, then you ought to know that now they're totally extinct is T-H-E-Y apostrophe R-E. They are. Now they're totally extinct. But he used T-H-E-R-E. I can live with that because the word there is really hard for a lot of us. The one that fried my egg was this one. Obama failed when he tried to use the law to save the species. Tried. Anybody know how you spell tried? I know it's not T-R-Y-E-D, but that's how he spelled it in that tweet.
That's pretty bad.
Don't you have a thing that has a little something that tells you that you're misspelling tried? Because that's not even a word.
Maybe he doesn't know what the red squiggly line means.
I mean, come on, man. Come on. If I was for your policy, I'd be rooting for you to get it right. By the way, speaking of my Facebook page, I'm WGN King John on social media. On Facebook yesterday, I posted a just short few paragraphs about my thoughts about the president retweeting a comic suggestion that the Clintons were in on Epstein's death. And a lot of you are reading that and sharing that and commenting on that. It's a pretty vibrant and spirited and not awful discussion.
The president was asked about it today and, of course, you know, stood behind it and then talked about how many times Bill Clinton was reported on on Epstein's plane and all of that, said he was right to retweet it. And unfortunately, he did it in front of a helicopter, so the audio is so bad, I can't really play it for you.
Well, maybe that's a blessing. I mean, now we know what he said. He's standing behind it. I noted yesterday that he didn't take the tweet down. I was hoping that somebody would get to him that way, although he famously never does. He doesn't even correct typos. I'm worried about typos. I know that's really beside the point. By the way, Steve Bertrand, when I got home yesterday, my wife, who doesn't talk to me too much usually about the content of that day's show, said I had to chuckle when Steve Bertrand said, John, I think it's so cute how you believe those people.
Well, cute how you believe that diehard... Right.
Go ahead, finish that thought.
Well, diehard Trump supporters would agree to continue to like the president, but also agree that it was a bad idea to retweet that conspiracy theory.
Because I think people are, at the end of the day, people. And even people who support Donald Trump know that was bad form. I thought that was a pretty simple, safe remark. You didn't think so, and a lot of people didn't think so. But I stand by that. I think a lot of you who listen to me know that I have faith in you. Watch me pander to these people now. But I really think that you can like Donald Trump, but not like everything he says or does, or believe everything he says or does. And I thought that tweet was so inappropriate that even his supporters would go, yeah, that was a bad one. You know, the same way Clinton supporters once upon a time when Bill was president could say, yeah, you shouldn't have done that. You can be both. You don't have to drink the Kool-Aid all the time. That's all I was trying to say. Mike, you're on WGN Radio. After Steve's news in just a minute, we're going to talk about the teaching of LGBTQ history in the state schools. What did you want to say about that, Mike?
Well, you know, first of all, I have faith in you, but I don't know about the rest of the world.
Thank you.
But otherwise, I believe maybe they're starting to go a little overboard with the situation on the LBG. First of all, I don't think they need the parade anymore. We don't have a heterosexual flag. We don't have a heterosexual town. Are they going to start teaching heterosexual history or have a heterosexual month?
I'll ask the state lawmaker those questions.
I think
it's out there. My wife, we have, you know, there's members of my family that are, you know, gay. I think one's going to become a transgender and a lesbian. And I have no problem. I just don't think they should try to force us to like, or I have a feeling that with the youth nowadays, unless they are gay or bisexual or lesbian, they're trying to make them like their life is less worthwhile because they are not that way.
Come on, do you really think that? Do you really think that young kids who are straight are being told that their life isn't as worthwhile because they're not gay or bi or queer?
Well, because they throw it in front of you constantly that, you know, I'm not saying that they're not telling you this is the way to be, but it just seems like they're emphasizing it.
Here's what I take exception with what you said. I mean, not to quibble with all of the points that you're trying to make, but you say, do they need the Pride Parade anymore? I don't know that needs the right word. You might answer yes, but I think if you want the Pride Parade, if people enjoy the Pride Parade, then why not have a Pride Parade? It is the most attended parade in our city. And this city has a parade every day. We have too many festivals in Chicago. The grand poobah of them all.
We're starting to hire Irish again, so I think we should get rid of the St. Patrick's Day parade.
Let's talk to somebody who knows a little bit more about this. State Representative Anna Moeller is on a phone line. Anna, this is John. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, John? Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you for your time, and thank you for this conversation. So tell me a little bit about this bill and where it is. It's the law now, right? Has it not yet? It was signed, correct?
It was, yes. Governor Pritzker signed this last Friday.
And so what does it say? I read the law. I read the bill. I guess it's the law now. But it seems to me a little vague in exactly what will happen in the classrooms.
Sure. Well, so the law does two things. The first thing is that it requires that any state funding for textbooks can only be used on textbooks that are non-discriminatory. In portraying people from all classes that are protected under the Illinois Human Rights Act. The second thing that it does is it requires that when school districts are teaching history, that they include the contributions of LGBT people in the curriculum. And incorporating them within the curriculum, ensuring that we are not ignoring or leaving out the contributions of significant people throughout history so that we have a greater understanding of people who have come before us and shape the society in which we live. The bill does not require a special class be taught on the subject matter. It does not require a certain amount of time be spent on the subject matter. It gives school districts a maximum flexibility in how they introduce the subject, but it does require that schools no longer ignore the fact that we've had LGBT people throughout history who've done incredible things that have, you know, it shaped our society. Mm-hmm. So that's basically what the bill does.
So I guess what one school teaches could be radically different than the way another school would teach it.
Yes, I mean, as it is right now with the teaching of history and the movements that have shaped our society, you are going to see variation. We see variation right now between the way one teacher teaches, World War II versus how another teacher might approach the subject matter. We anticipate this will be the same with the subject matter, but there are resources that will be made available to teachers when they are trying to incorporate this history in their curriculum and their lesson plan. The Legacy Project is a local organization in Chicago that has done extensive academic research and has materials that will be made available to schools who want to talk about the contributions of LGBT individuals throughout history. So like Jane Addams, the founder of Hull House in Chicago, the godmother of social work in the United States, who was a lesbian. Sally Ride, who was a very famous astronaut, first woman astronaut in space. All of these different individuals and many more who we think students should learn about and understand their identities. So that people understand that there have been LGBT individuals throughout history who have done incredible things for our society.
I wonder how that would I literally wonder, like, how that would read and what a quiz would look like on that. And would it be something that would just be touched on over the course of one day when the teacher was talking? Or would they pepper the conversation all semester long with, and by the way, Sally Ride was gay, or Casimir Pulaski was gay, or something like that? I just wonder right. How they integrate that.
Well, this will be up to the school districts and the schools on how they incorporate the material. But as I said, there will be resources made available.
Sure.
Sample lesson plans that teachers can use.
I understand that, but my guess is that maybe downstate, where maybe this whole notion doesn't play that well, you know,
right.
Some history teacher may say, and by the way, Sally Ride, she was gay. Okay, page
yeah.
two.
Yeah.
And they're
right.
done with that. And there's no need to or ability to monitor that. It is what it is. I don't know if you would just comment on that some might give it short shift and others might, you know, spend plenty of time on it.
Sure. And we would hope that they wouldn't give it short shrift, that they would understand the intention behind the bill. And the fact that this act, understanding and knowing about this history is a benefit to all students. It creates a more comprehensive understanding of history and people and events that have shaped our society. So we would hope that that's not the way that it's presented. and the groups, the advocates, the Equality Illinois and the Safe School Alliance, are going to be working with the State Board of Education and the Illinois Teacher Federation and the Illinois Education Association to talk about implementing this curriculum so that it is presented in a thoughtful and meaningful way in the schools throughout the state. So we understand that implementation is going to be very important, but at the same time, you know, my husband is a history teacher. He teaches eighth grade history. I know the way that he presents history is probably different than, you know, a colleague down the hall from him. Every teacher has their own
yeah.
style.
Well, let me read you a couple of the texts that are coming in now. John, why do we need to know historical people's sexuality? It should not define their accomplishments. You know, maybe if we come far enough, we don't have to know or care that Sally Ride's orientation was this or that. I don't know if you want to comment on that.
Sure. I mean, that was a common question that I had from colleagues, and, you know, certainly during when this bill was introduced. And my response is that we don't realize it, but understanding who a historical figure was and who their family was is integral and important to understanding that person and why and how they were able to accomplish what they did. And so when we learn about Abraham Lincoln, we learn about his family, Mary Todd, and his children. It's part of who he was, and it influenced who he was as a president.
Are you saying that Abraham Lincoln was gay?
No, I'm not. But I'm saying we know about his family. Whereas when you're learning about a gay, an individual in history who may have been gay, that portion of his or her life has been ignored or redacted because there's been a stigma attached to being gay or lesbian.
Well, there's a lot of historical figures whose orientation we don't know, but it's debated. And
this will not get into that.
The waters are so murky about people's orientation then and or now. And then I think the other thing is, okay, so Sally Ride was this very successful, famous astronaut. There's tragedy involved, but we know her and we should know of her. And if her orientation is part of that, fine. But I think that that sort of data point, if you will, about her is one thing. What will, I think, be upsetting to a lot of other people is if we try to, oh God, I got to pick my words carefully here. Pass judgment. I think there's an audience out there that feels that it's, well, for one thing, some people think it's sinful. Obviously, we're talking about public schools. It's not my view, but I'm just thinking of all of the different views out there and how squishy people get about this and how upsetting to a lot of parents it's going to be if their kids, instead of learning reading and writing arithmetic, are coming home learning something like this. Do you know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying, and that's exactly why this bill was introduced. It's to get rid of that negative stigma. It's to show positive role models to students, both students who may be LGBT and feeling isolated and feeling like they don't have positive role models that they can look to in history or in society. And it's also important for straight children to know that there were extraordinary LGBT people in history who did extraordinary things. And the slurs and the negative stereotypes that they have been exposed to will be challenged by that. So this is exactly why this bill was introduced and why it's so important. It's to change the perception and end the negative stereotypes and, falsehoods about the LGBT community. It's very powerful when children have role models that they can look up to and know that, you know, these people did amazing things and they were gay and they were lesbian. And, you know, that's something that can be life-changing for children.
630 said, oh my God, teach kids how to read first. Why do we have to mention a person's sexuality and their accomplishments? This is ridiculous. The next text says, you have some seriously conservative districts in southern Illinois. They won't touch this topic. John says, 630, so a child can graduate eighth grade and even high school not knowing basic geography, and yet they need to know LGBT history before they can graduate eighth grade. Is it true that, I mean...
That part, I think that's a misreading of the bill. They're not going to be specifically tested in LGBT history before they can graduate. That section of the bill talks about that they have to pass history. And, you know, this is one aspect of history, but they have to know the Constitution. They have to take a Constitution test before they can graduate.
Okay, so they have to pass history. This will be part of the curriculum. They could fail the quiz on this, if you will, and still pass the class.
Right.
Fair enough.
And we're certainly not supplanting knowledge of geometry or math with LGBT history. This is incorporated into the existing curriculum, the existing programming that's already offered in schools. It's basically saying stop ignoring the fact that there have been people who were LGBT in history and show their whole lives. Let's be honest and comprehensive about people's lives and not.
Have you seen what the curricula guidelines will look like? Like you said, there's materials that are available. Is that stuff that I wasn't able to find that. You've seen that. Do we know exactly what will be put forward in front of the teachers?
Well, it'll be up to the teachers to develop their lesson plans around this, but there will be, they'll be there. They don't have to use the lesson plan that the Legacy Project will be has available for them. But they'll be made accessible. And a lot of schools are already incorporating this history. I have a good friend who lives in my community who teaches in Palatine High School. She already incorporates this this information in her curriculum because she wants her students to know, the full history of people who've impacted our world. So a lot of teachers are already doing this.
Really? Teaching history will, if the person they're talking about was LGBTQ, was somewhere in one of those letters, they'll point that particular fact out.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's already being done in a lot of, because I use Abraham Lincoln as an example. We talk a lot about his family. We talk about Martin Luther King and his family. We talk about, women leaders and how they've shaped our society. We talk about their families. This is the same thing. This has nothing to do with sexuality. It has everything to do with identity and who these people are as real, full human beings.
That's really interesting. All right. So would be next fall? Is that when this will actually be implemented then?
Yes. Yes. The 2020 school year.
And I'm older.
So there'll be plenty of time for schools to start gathering resources and books and other materials that they can use to help present this material.
Anna is a 43rd District Representative, a former City Council member in Elgin. Is that where you make your home these days, Anna?
Yes, it is. Yes.
I appreciate your time. This may be a conversation that we'll have again down the road, but I sure appreciate you giving us the highlights so far today.
Thank you. I truly appreciate your interest, and I'd be happy to talk more about this.
Anna Mueller is a Democrat from the 43rd. Is it important to know that Sally Ride was gay? I guess it was. I think it's going to be controversial or upsetting for some people. That's not a reason to not do it. Progress is always upsetting to some people. But I'm also stammering a lot here because I don't want to sound like that guy. I'm not that guy that isn't an LGBTQ supporter.
No, we know you're not that guy. That makes sense. You don't have, it's not a...
Okay, well, thank you for that, because I don't think I'm representing myself very well here.
Well, you're not, and that's why I'm trying to help.
So here's some texts. Will there be a sexual identity clause for every person discussed, John? Abe Lincoln straight, Freddie Mercury gay, Betsy Ross straight? I don't know the answer to that question, but she kept referencing Abe Lincoln. And I thought, okay, so the Lincolns dealt with mental health issues and the loss of a child and stuff. I didn't know why she kept bringing up the Lincolns, as we know about their family. I don't know what exactly she was talking about.
There have been whispers that Abraham Lincoln was
gay. Well, that's what I thought she was saying. I'm like, okay, let's go. Is Abe gay? And she says, no. Okay, well then, why do we keep talking about him? Because I think he might have been. John, here's my question. Are the social studies teachers saying, here's information about Abraham Lincoln. He was heterosexual, married to Mary, etc. Will that be part of the teaching? Literally, will we discuss the orientation of individuals so we know? I don't have an answer to that. John, prior to your interview, I had no knowledge of what the new bill meant. Now that I've listened to her, I disagree with it. It's odd to bring up historical figures' sexual identity in most learning situations, and I don't feel in most cases it matters. I think that is what my point is. Of course I'm on that side, but I don't think it's necessary to tell people that. Not necessarily to hide it, of course, but I don't think that it necessarily has to be, and this is the point, has to be part of the curriculum. If we had a social studies class, then the gay pride movement, the hashtag MeToo movement, the LGBTQ movement, of course would be part of a curriculum that talks about the 21st century. I mean, yeah, but I'm not sure that it needs to be plugged into some of these other lessons. 317, kudos, John. My brother-in-law is gay. I hearken and respect his struggles as well as many in the LGBT community. But this bill was not well thought out at all, and the sponsor of it just proved it on your show. I'm an educator, and I do as much positive teaching around what is a very difficult topic in the classroom. I appreciate the time you spent on this. Very helpful. I don't think I helped at all. Looking for the language of the law itself. Here it is. In public schools only, the teaching of history shall include a study of the roles and contributions of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people in the history of this country and this state. The teaching of history shall also include a study of the role of labor unions and their interaction with government in achieving the goals of a mixed free enterprise system. No pupils shall be graduated from the eighth grade of any public school unless he or she has received such instruction in the history of the United States and gives evidence of having a comprehensive knowledge thereof.
Now that's crazy, I think. The union thing is clearly just political.
I don't know why that's the next sentence. That makes no sense. Because there's no connection between the gays and the unions, or the LGBTQ and the organized labor.
But they're big Democratic donors, and the unions are under attack.
Oh! The teaching of history shall also include a study of the role of labor unions and their interaction with government in achieving the goals of a free enterprise system.
Now,
unions are good.
I'm pretty much for unions for the most part. But and that's crazy.
Other language that preceded this says the teaching of history shall include a study of the role and contributions of African Americans and other ethnic groups, including but not restricted to the Polish, the Lithuanians, Germans, Hungarians, Irish, Bohemians, Russians, Albanians, Italians, Czechs, Slovaks. You're worried the Italians are going to get aced out? Not a chance, Bucky. French, Scots, Hispanics, Asian Americans, etc.
Who did they not name?
I know. What if you were just... And it's funny, too, because...
Portuguese.
Well, but there's the etc. Isn't that funny? And you have to teach all of these groups plus the etc. Who are the etc.? And the history of this country and state, the contributions of all of these people. I'll tell you what, the wording of that sentence is just, it's a textbook on the politics of getting things in curricula. The teaching of history shall include a study of the role of the contributions of African Americans and other ethnic groups, right? African Americans up front, make sure we get that box checked. Oh, you guys want to get in that room too? Okay, come on in. Who's coming in? And then they just start to do it. Albanians, Lithuanians, Germans, Hungarians, Irish, Bohemians. Bohemians.
UAW.
And the union. And so the LGBTQ community said, well, we're not on there. We're not even in the et ceteras. So now they're in there too. So good luck to you. Hey, good luck to you if you're a history teacher. Props to you, man, because... If you're a history teacher and you're listening to me right now in...
Trying to find someone from Liechtenstein who's contributed to Illinois history.
No, I think south of I-80, this is going to be problematic. I'm a little surprised they got the bill passed. I mean, you think about it, aren't there as well? I guess most of the legislators, you know, the acres are red, but the people are blue in Illinois, so... I guess most of the lawmakers are from the city and the immediate surrounding suburbs. And so you don't really have to care what they think about this in Effingham, because there aren't that many people in Effingham. Okay. Oh, look at that. All my phone lines are ringing. By the way, Steve Bertrand, I found another clause in that bill that says that they have to teach LGBTQ history in the state of Illinois in history classes, as
yes.
well as the contributions of African Americans and the Poles and the Lithuanians. Then there was the clause they put in there about labor unions and their interaction with government in achieving the goals of a mixed free enterprise system. It also says here students will have to learn about the role that WGN Radio has played in keeping America and Illinois safe, strong, and free. Wow. Well, that's a good curriculum.
I didn't know he had such deep pockets.
John, that wording proves that some people still need to learn how to construct clear and concise sentences before worrying about people's sexuality. Hi, John. I'm a Christian. I feel we're going to do this. We also need to teach history classes. Everyone who is Christian that had an accomplishment as well. You know, the kids who go to private schools won't have to learn any of this stuff. This is for public schools. But I could see you pushing back that way, too. If you feel that as a Christian going to a public school, that's an affront to your beliefs, I could see why you would advocate for pointing out that somebody was a good Christian. Don't tell the Muslims and the Jews and all the others about that, but I get it. It's just going to be very complicated. You can imagine the poor teacher going, okay, so this person, who are they? What did they do? Jeff, you're on WGN Radio. What did you want to say? You're on the air. Hi, Jeff. Yeah, we lost Jeff. Let's try Glenn. Hi, Glenn. You're on WGN.
Hi, John. I just wanted to offer an alternative perspective to what your point is. It's for the kids that have only been introduced to the LGBT community because of the fact that in a negative aspect, they're bad, they don't have a chance, things like that. To be able to present the fact that there's a possibility to be LGBT and also be able to achieve goals of scientists or government officials or historical people of note gives a community, a child who might be suffering with trying to mentally deal with their choices or their being, it gives them some strength. I mean, the idea that, you know, the black community or Hispanic community have people to look up to, there isn't any reason that the LGBT community can't have the second, you know, same opportunities to have people to look up to instead of being ashamed of things because that's what they're around.
Yeah, that's well said, and I'm glad you called in to say that. I want that for them, too. I'm not sure that that's the job of a history teacher. I'm not sure that a history curriculum is the place for that.
But it is maybe the job of a school, and that's the way to have this help the school do it.
Yeah, I guess.
Right. I mean, we're taught about black history or Hispanic history, a people of note, okay? And that's brought up in a history class. The idea that it because it's a sexual orientation or a sexual position is just the fact that it's an awkward situation, but it's a situation that presents itself in today's community, and let the people, the children who have the inclinations of those communities to be able not to be ashamed of themselves, but to see that, you know, hey, that person was a mayor, or that person was a governor, or that person was an astronaut. There's no reason. And where else in the curriculum are those people brought up?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good point. It's not going to come up in math class, probably. And when you
exactly.
And another point that you're talking about, and again, maybe the school is the place for us to empower kids and comment on this. Maybe not, but if you just think about it, it is profound. The sort of roadblock to personal or professional development being gay has been. Now, it's less now than it used to be, but I'm sure it's an issue that gay kids today deal with. And Lord knows if your parents or grandparents were gay, people who were gay in the 60s and 50 and 60 and 70 years ago, for them to achieve must have been so much more problematic. You know, personally, professionally, it must have been so much more difficult. And I'm sure it's a challenge for kids today as well.
It's a challenge for adults today. I mean, there's states out there that still can terminate somebody just because of the people that they love. And until those type of rules change, until we highlight the opportunity for everyone to be treated fairly or equally, you know, saying that that community can't have that brought up in a history class is another form of being able to say, well, we really know that they're there, but we're really not going to talk about them because it's awkward.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Well said, sir.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Is that Kathy? We'll take on line one. Kathy, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good. You're on the air. What's up?
So there's no curriculum provided by the state yet, so each teacher is going to do in their own way.
Yes.
So the people who are not, you know, completely, quote, on board with LGBTQ, they're going to address it completely different from somebody who might actually be LGBTQRT or whatever the initials are.
I think you're right. I think the difference is going to be vast from one schoolroom to another.
I mean, if you're going to do something like that, you need to come up with the curriculum and exactly how you want it taught and exactly what you want said. Like you said, that woman kept talking about Lincoln, but, you know, supposedly he wasn't gay. But even if he was, who could talk for him or against him, or you know what I mean?
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Kathy. 312 texted and said, "Hello, John. I was screaming at the radio while I was driving. Especially ironic, she kept referencing Lincoln. Obviously, she is unaware of the speculation that he's gay or was gay. As a teacher, I do not see the benefit of tying someone's sexual orientation to their accomplishments." 217 is a proud daughter of a gay man who died from AIDS in 1994. I do not agree with the bill that mandates LGBTQ history be taught in the schools. My father was not defined solely by his orientation. He was so much more than that. And on the text go, I was watching the newly released video from the Dayton Police Department of the officers engaging the shooter. And it's, you know, I don't think we can say this too often when it happens, that when you watch the video of what happened, and there's now other camera angles that are coming available, you just see chaos, people just running literally for their lives down the street. And there's dozens and dozens and dozens of people that are just plowing into the street and running for their lives. And then here comes a man with a gun, and it's the police officer, and he's going the other way. He doesn't know what he's about to encounter. He doesn't have a lot of protective gear. His colleagues aren't with him. And when they do arrive, there's 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 officers, but they are as vulnerable as you or I. Maybe they've got the vests on, right? But they are sitting ducks there, and they're just putting the gun in front of them, and they're marching forward. They're walking into that storm. Thank you to those of you who serve us that way, because that is a task not all of us are cut out for.
Well, as long as we're on the subject of stories that don't get enough attention sometimes, it happened just last week outside of Muncie High School. I don't know if you heard the story earlier today, where a kid showed a gun to another kid and said, "I think I might go shoot a couple people." And the witness right away texted security. The police came. They got the gun and 2 full magazines of ammunition in the boy's shorts. So, you know, the whole see something, say something, we laugh at a lot of times.
We do laugh at that a lot of times, right? We kind of roll our eyes at how ineffective that seems to be. Kudos to that kid, huh? Yeah. By the way, I'm not exactly sure what to make of this Chris Cuomo story, but I know that it's trending, and it is pretty amazing. I mean, if you're Chris Cuomo, you're the hot-headed, one of the anchors on CNN, and you're always getting into arguments with Kellyanne Conway or somebody. I'm not exactly sure what his role is. I guess he's a talk show host, essentially. He's not a news anchor, right? And so he's always bantering with somebody. And so I guess if you're Chris Cuomo and you're going about your day in New York, you're going to get some of the same sort of grief that Mitch McConnell gets when he goes to a pancake house, right? There's some people that agree with you, some people that don't. And when you go out and you're a public person, you're going to hear from it, especially if you're Chris Cuomo, because he's just kind of a hothead when he's on TV. So this one guy comes up to him in New York, and I'm not exactly sure where it is, but he calls him Fredo. He says, actually, he asks if his name is Fredo, or he called him Fredo. And Cuomo just lost it. Okay, I think we got all the bleeps in the right place.
I thought that's who you were.
Oh, from the right, call me Fredo. My name is Chris Cuomo. I'm an anchor on CNN. Fredo is from The Godfather. He was that weak brother.
Isn't that your?
And they use it as an Italian aspersion. Any of you Italian?
Italian?
It's a insult to your people. It's an insult to f***ing people. It's like the N word for us. Is that a cool thing?
You're a much more reasonable guy in person than you seem to be on television.
Yeah, but if you want to play, then we'll play. If you've got something you want to say about what I do on television, then say it. But I'm going to fall to you.
Hey, listen.
What?
I don't want any problems.
Yeah, you're going to have a big problem.
What's the problem?
It's a little different on TV.
What's the problem?
Don't insult me like that.
I didn't insult you.
You call me Fredo. It's like I call you pump You like that? You want that to be your nickname?
I didn't call you that.
You called me Fredo. You know my name's not Fredo.
I thought your name was.
You did not think my name was Fredo. Don't be a liar. You want to be a man? Stand up like a man.
I'm standing up, man.
You want to be a man out here?
Yeah,
own it. Then own what you said.
Hey.
Then own what you said.
Listen, man. I don't have a problem with you, man.
You're going to have a problem.
What? What are you going to do about it?
I'll ruin you. Throw you down these stairs like a punk.
Please do.
Why? So you can sue? Or you call me Fredo. Take a swing.
I'm not going to swing.
Take a swing. Watch your hands.
And then they start to get really close to him. Now they're nose to nose, chest to chest. He says, don't touch me. Watch your hands. And then somebody got in between him. It was sort of like a baseball fight, really. And then they separated him and they went their separate ways. It was interesting what Sean Hannity said. Sean Hannity on Fox News is on at the same time as Chris Cuomo is on CNN. And Hannity said, he's out with his 9-year-old daughter and his wife, and this guy, the man that was heckling Chris Cuomo, is being a jackass in front of his family. In my honest opinion, Chris Cuomo has zero to apologize for. He deserves the apology. Sean Hannity is standing up for the way Chris Cuomo handled that. And to be honest with you, when I watched that video and listened to it, I thought, I kind of think that Cuomo was within his right as a person. But professionally, that's probably not a good idea.
Right. That guy definitely knew what he was asking for. I mean, he was trying to start an argument.
He was trying to start a fight and this video. So now we're going to get Chris Cuomo in an embarrassing situation.
But you're right. And we know very well in this profession, we're public figures. So we can't behave like any other person. We have to hold ourselves to a higher standard.
But it's not like, but he's not Walter Cronkite. I'm trying to think of who is the perfect figure measure of decorum for whom we would think that would be a real aberration. And it's not Chris Cuomo. I mean, it's like,
Lester
I think if you
Holt.
Pick, right, it's not Lester Holt. It's
that would
not
be interesting.
Bill Curtis, right? It's not one of those guys. It's Cuomo. That's kind of what I thought he would do. And by golly, he did it. CNN anchor Chris Cuomo threatening a heckler over being called Fredo. And now Cuomo is apologizing. Quote, appreciate all the support, but truth is I should be better than the guys baiting me, he tweeted. This happens all the time these days, often in front of my family, but there is a lesson. No need to add to the ugliness. I should be better than what I oppose. The president took a swipe at the journalist. Donald Trump tweeted that he thought that Chris was a Fredo also. The truth hurts, he added. Totally lost it. Low ratings at CNN. And then the president tweeted, it doesn't matter what the president tweeted. Cuomo has tweeted several times in the past week about pushing for increased gun safety laws while noting that he's a gun owner himself. And then the articles are talking a little bit about that. I don't know that that's what this was all about. Maybe it was. The conversation escalated, and maybe the worst part of it, besides the F-bombs, was that Cuomo said, I'll throw you down these stairs. He threatened to throw somebody down the stairs. Cuomo never touched the guy, and the guy never touched him, though. Discussions on social media have since turned into debates and jokes over whether or not the term is a slur. Columnist Michael Corrin said, the nonsense about hashtag Cuomo and hashtag Fredo should not obscure the fact that people are fiddling while the U.S. is burning. And that's true, too. But I am always interested in how the language shifts and changes. I mean, we were talking about this the other day when Epstein commits suicide. Pardon me, I just did it. When Epstein died of suicide, we were reminded that the language around suicide has shifted. We used to say commits, and I think the politically correct and appropriate way to describe that action now is to say somebody died of suicide. They died by suicide. Commit is not the verb that's normally used around that. And also, I'll try and change. I'm learning. Fredo, though, is not a phrase that I have seen used pejoratively before. I haven't heard it used at all. I'm not Italian. I don't run with Italians. I just haven't heard that. Cuomo went off. And so when the guy asked him, he says, no, I thought that was your name. I thought that was your name. He says, you know that's not my name. You're just trying to get a rise out of me. And he totally got it. CNN is standing behind him. It doesn't look like he's going to lose any minutes on TV. And maybe, unlike Tucker Carlson of late, it doesn't look like he's going to lose any sponsors. There's no reporting that that's about to happen. We didn't get to this earlier. We have just enough time to mention the 30 most iconic celebrity hairstyles of all time. I don't know if you guys are any good at this, but what they were doing was they were pitching us an interview with a celebrity Hollywood hairstylist, person who cuts and styles hair for a bunch of movie stars. And then this person would come on and talk about hairstyle trends. And I'm not going to do that, but I do have his list of the 30 most iconic celebrity hairstyles of all time. Number 30, Janet Jackson. 29, Zooey Deschanel. 28, Julia Roberts. 27, Diana Ross. Halle Berry is 25. Meg Ryan's 24. Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, 23. Louise Brooks is 22. Veronica Lake, 21. Tina Turner is 20. I like that. Princess Di, 19. Brigitte Bardot, 18. Audrey Hepburn, 17. Bob Marley, 16. Then Mia Farrow. And now here's where it gets crazy. Farrah Fawcett is 14. Farrah Fawcett should be one. Farrah Fawcett is the most iconic celebrity hairstyle of all time. Farrah Fawcett. Who can compete with Farrah Fawcett? Nobody. She's at 14. Number 13, James Brown. 12 is Elvis. Elvis should be higher on the list. Twiggy is 11. Then Bo Derek. Bo Derek. That's inspired. I don't know if you guys remember the movie 10, but she and that hair changed our world. Number 9 is Grace Jones. Victoria Beckham, really, is 8? Okay. The Beatles' mop top hairdo is 7. Mike Score, look him up, Flock of Seagulls, is 6. Jennifer Aniston, 5. I can live with that.
She's had like all the most basic hairstyles, though.
Don't you think when people think about her, though, they think about and love her hair?
I think they just love her in general.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is, now that you mention it. Okay, we'll take her down and she could swap with Farrah Fawcett.
Yeah, that's amazing that she's ahead of Farrah.
You're too young to have had a Farrah Fawcett poster in your dorm room, and you might not have had a Farrah Fawcett poster in your dorm room. But I'm telling you, Farrah Fawcett hair and the whole Farrah Fawcett thing was the thing.
She still, I think, has the most popular poster, right?
I would look that up. Elif isn't here today.
What about Dorothy Hamill? She had an iconic hairstyle.
She did, now that you mention it, and the Hamill hairdo is not on here either. That's right. Well, Kramer's not on the list. Explain that to me. And I know Marsha's was very basic, but Marsha Brady, didn't all the girls once upon a time want to have hair like Marsha Brady?
Okay, so here's what they say about the poster really quick. From 1976, that's when it came out, it has sold over 12 million copies.
Wow. Most of them to guys from Grundy County, by the way. I went to school there. Jennifer Aniston, 5. Shirley Temple, 4. Okay, I can live with that. Marilyn Monroe, 3. Not exactly sure what Marilyn Monroe hairstyle they're thinking about, but I guess generally Marilyn Monroe had famous look. Number 2 is James Dean. And the number 1 most iconic celebrity hairstyle of all time, Amy Winehouse.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's pretty good,
I guess. The whole Amy Winehouse thing just makes me so sad. There's a commercial out right now that talks about Amy Winehouse, and in just kind of a casual way. They're playing the music in there, and then the music stops and starts. I don't even remember what it was for. But I think Amy Winehouse is such a tragic story. I'm not ready to include her casually in commercials for phones or something. Amy Winehouse, much like her music, Amy Winehouse's hairstyle took a retro classic and put a modern spin to it. Yes, she had a look, and her hair was fantastic, and her singing was so good. Did you watch the movie about her, the documentary or whatever you call it, the biopic about Amy Winehouse?
I didn't see that one, but if you've ever seen, you know about The Curse of 27 with a lot of artists. They have a documentary on that alone on Netflix about all the artists that we've lost at the age of 27.
Oh, that's right, that's right. Kurt Cobain was 27, mm-hmm. Et cetera, et cetera. Was Janis Joplin 27?
Yep, Janis Joplin.
Yeah, there's something about that age, huh?
What's his name from the Rolling Stones?
Oh boy.
The original guy.
See, I should know that, but I don't. 27.
I think it's Brian something. That's a look.
255. All right, I'll have that for you in a second. Plus, we'll head into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We've got some stories that matter. Plus, wait a minute. Is this Mandolini G? Is that the name of the caller? Is that actually a name? Mandolini G, you're on WGN. Hello.
Hi, it's actually Mandolini Becky, but that's fine. How you doing?
Good. What do you want to say?
I just want to say that having lived through that era, that while I agree with you that Farrah Fawcett was more iconic, I can't tell you how many times my friends and I tried to get those perfect wave back curls. We tried beer cans. We tried everything, whereas the Rachel was much easier for people to just get cut and have it look pretty decent. But the Farrah Fawcett curls were almost impossible.
I don't know how you all were even trying to do it. Wouldn't you take a curling iron or put curlers in your hair? Is that what you did?
There really wasn't that many curling irons and products in the 70s and 80s and early 80s. We didn't have gels. I used my father's shaving cream to mat down the fuzzies. There was zippity doo. I think that was about it. So we didn't have all the current products available to us.
So Farrah Fawcett, 14. Where should she be?
Oh, I think just because of the poster, at least within the top 10 is my guess.
Thank you for the call. All right, I'm glad you're listening. I appreciate the help.
Sure.
Have a good day. You bet. It's 256. Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Stories that matter. This was not one of them. Coming up.
Hi, I'm Dr. Bal Nandra from IV Solution and Ketamine Centers of Chicago. My clinic uses ketamine to conquer major depression, anxiety, and PTSD. Ketamine for depression has been described as the greatest advancement in mental health in over 50 years, with an up to 80% success rate and often immediate relief. Here's renowned anthem singer and my patient, John Vincent, who struggled for years with major depression and anxiety, describing how ketamine from IV Solution changed his life.
Hi, my name is John Vincent, and like Dr. Bal said, I suffered tremendously from OCD, anxiety, and major depressive disorder. Not only has Dr. Bal changed my life, he saved my life. Ketamine has been a huge game changer, and I recommend it for anyone.
It's time you conquer your depression and anxiety. Call for your free consultation, 844-9-IV-MEDS. That's 844-948-6337. Or visit KetamineChicago.com, KetamineChicago.com.
Afraid your uneven sidewalk, driveway, or patio will be a costly fix? Don't replace it, raise it. You know who to call. PermaSeal at 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Your best for being better, PermaSeal.
I need to read this. And then, by the way, Kevin, do you have your headphones on over there? I just want to make sure I know exactly where we're going here. White Sox got rained out last night, correct? So the White Sox twin bill starts today at 3:40, first pitch?
Correct.
So we're going to do the news at 3 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. And then right after that, it'll be White Sox pregame.
Kim's going to walk you into that. Mm-hmm. White Sox are playing who again?
The Houston Astros.
Houston Astros at home. So do you have to go out and come back in? Does one ticket get you to both games?
This took a minute last night to explain to the listeners, because we wanted to clarify for everyone. If you had tickets to last night's game, you had to exchange it at the box office prior to today's games for those to still be valid for today's doubleheader.
Got it.
Basically. So if you had tickets to last night's game, you can still go today, but you have to go to the box office first, talk with a box office rep, they'll exchange it for you if you want to go to both games today.
Fair enough.
Or well, one.
It's a nice night so far, anyway.
It looks great night right now. It's
good time
it stays
to go
that way, yeah.
All right, Kim Gordon, you ready for me to come into you there?
I'm ready to rock and roll whenever you are ready.
We do, and then you get ready.
Hand it over.
We'll get to White Sox baseball here. We've got Chicago stories told 24/7 on 720 WGN Chicago. If you've got a smart speaker, say play WGN Radio on TuneIn.